It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you into the 9 o'clock hour. We go. Shout out to our boy George Lindsay. Ooh. He's the one of the morning DJs over on the Morning Bull. There's all these signs on the wall in the studio, and they're congratulating him, and they've got tacos, and they've got streamers, and he's got a gold hat on with a dollar sign on it. And I'm like, what's going on? 50 years in radio today.
50 years in radio?
50 years in radio today for George Lindsay.
I honestly wouldn't have thought he'd be old enough to do that. That's good for George and his youthful demeanor.
Started at 15 years old. So
did he?
Yep.
He started like working at a radio station or something when he was 15.
I said, it's been a continuous 50 years. He said, yes. Yeah, so, he said, sometimes it was part-time, you know, but always getting a check in radio. You know, I think that's just a function of the radio business through the year. If you're in it for 50 years, there will be a spell where you're part-time probably, you know.
Especially like as country music has country has been basically like seven completely different genres over the course of the last two decades.
Bingo.
He's really rolled with all the different changes and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking up at that on the wall. I'm like, 50 years, man. He's like, yeah, I started at 15. I'm like, yeah. They pull this celebration for me someday. I'll be 88 years old in the studio. Dude, I did my first radio show at age 38. I don't know
that. You still sound young.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
that's the biggest thing is you don't have to, even though by then we'll be almost exclusively streaming probably.
Yeah.
So yeah, your appearance will matter a little bit, but as long as you don't sound old, you'll be just fine. Look at Mad Dog. Like, how old's Mad Dog Russo?
Mid 60s, probably, I would guess.
But he doesn't seem like, you know, the two guys I think that maintain a youthful demeanor, even as Mad Dog Russo is the consummate grumpy old man.
Yeah.
He's the exact same personality. He was a grumpy old man when he was 25 years old.
No doubt. Yes.
So he's still got a very youthful spirit to him. And then like Regis. Regis didn't really have success in TV, large scale success, until he was, I think, well into his 50s.
Yes.
And kept it going just because he was high energy.
He was high energy, man.
You know, your buddy, my friend Jeff Farragher, who went to Notre Dame around the same time as you, he dated Regis Philbin's daughter for a long time in college.
Did he? Oh, yeah. I know one of them, JJ, was friends with my brother.
JJ was his girlfriend.
Okay. Yeah. Kevin was friends with JJ. That's cool. Wow, 6 degrees of separation from me and Farragher. It's either
you and I are basically Eskimo brothers. Yeah.
Exactly what I was going to say. We're Eskimo cousins.
We're Eskimo buds.
I don't know that. I think my brother was just friends with her. I don't think that.
Right, I know, but he knows her and she knows Jeff.
Yeah,
Jeff
sure.
Jeff is one of my best friends from high school.
Right. Eskimo cousins. Sean and Seth, Eskimo cousins. All right, let's get to Bobby Slowick. Bobby Slowick and the Texans were catching all sorts of heat for the plays where Kate Stover wound up singled up on Jonathan Greenard.
Yeah.
Let's hear from Bobby Slowick, and then we'll hash this out. How fair or unfair is the criticism over that ending up being the case so many times during that Vikings game? Do defenders have an advantage when they're blocked by non-O-linemen, Bobby?
I think, you know, everyone always talks about tight ends blocking D-ends, and I used to be on defense, so I get it. You know, like a coach outside linebackers, and it was always, can't believe they have a tight end blocking you. Like, that's embarrassing, you know, and all that. But really, everyone in the NFL does that. You know, you have to have variety in protections. You got to be able to do things with your front to help the front out when teams are gaming, so you're not just 5-0 all the time. You also got to be able to go 5-0 often and get the tight end out. You got to be able to do full turns where a tight end and a back are both in. Like, everyone does multiple protections. It really shows up when you don't execute them well, you know. And there were a number of times, you know, we had some tight ends in position on DNs that we didn't even have the right footwork from the start, you know, and that's going to be a really tough down. We know the issue when we call the protection. I would say starting point is on me. I probably did it too much, particularly too much too early. But it's a difficult defense to go against, and we got to be able to handle different ways of attacking it.
Yeah, Kate Stover got snowed under early in that game.
He got destroyed by Jonathan Greenard. And I said this on Monday. I said this on Sunday right after the game. It's one of these things that happens all the time, and you don't notice it until it doesn't work out. And it's very easy to get on and say, I can't believe they had a tight end blocking that guy. Now, like on that specific play, it was full turn protection. I was full turn protection is something you do, but it's also something that bad teams do a lot because they don't have good blockers.
Right.
And I think it's a little bit of all of that. Cade Stover at some point does have to be a guy that you can trust more in pass protection. I think what Slowik said about how often they did it and when they did it in the game early on, yeah, maybe do that later on after you've already set it up to where defenses aren't as champing at the bit to try to get there. But it's one of the problems the team has right now, blocking in general. It's as much as we love the pass game in the modern NFL, old school pass blocking is still important.
And turns
against,
out.
Against a team like the Vikings especially. So I think Slowik can do better in terms of how often he does it or who he has doing it. But some of it does come down to, man, you've got to mix up your protections or you're just going to be sitting there. You're just going to be sitting there like lambs to the slaughter. So Cade Stover's just got to continue to get better and do a better job of, like he said, like actually using his proper technique and everything when he's blocking.
Yeah, they don't have many choices at this point. That's the thing. Like they lost Brevin Jordan for the season. You know, you can't just rip out pages of your playbook. You got to.
The two things that I always. It goes viral on social media all the time. It's that what Bobby was just talking about. As a defensive, like Jonathan Grenard said that after the game, like it's insulting that they would have a tight end block me. They'll do it against better defensive ends than you, Jonathan Grenard. So there is that. The other one is always when defensive backs will say, "Yep, we knew exactly which routes were coming."
Yeah,
like yeah, that's not that uncommon either. It's when the guys when you don't have good wide receivers running those route combinations, that's when it's really lethal. So it always comes back on the offensive coordinator. I don't absolve Bobby Slowik from any blame in that game because at the end of the day, it is the execution of the offensive line and the tight ends that are his responsibility. And those guys aren't good at it right now.
Yeah.
The blocking in both the run game and pass game is not good enough, and that's all on the offensive coordinator.
Is 5-0 protection basically just where you got to protect with just your five offensive linemen?
It's five-man slide protection usually where, it's 5-0. It's five offensive linemen.
Yeah.
If you hear a 60 at the front or a 70
tight
at
end.
The front, it's a, well, with 60, it's just six men. Sometimes it's a running back. Sometimes it's tight end. 70, it's seven-man pass protection.
Yeah. Sometimes these coaches don't realize that we're playing this stuff on the radio and Bobby, I get it. Bobby's not going to be like a radio host where he's like, "Hey man, just 5-0 protection that I'm talking about."
Honestly, I like to make fun of deep offensive linemen a lot, mostly because I just hate them. So it's only because I hate them so much.
Right.
But I have some friends who are offensive linemen, you know?
Yeah.
A few. They've been to my house for dinner. I'm not a bigot or anything.
Right.
I just wouldn't let one marry my daughter. That's all. That's so when it comes to offensive linemen, I generally despise them.
Yeah.
Having said that, pass protection, even at the high school level, it's hard, man. it's really, really hard. I talked to my friend Drew Hodgson about this a lot. Mm-hmm. I really wish I had learned as much about pass pro while I was a player as I have since then. Because I think they don't generally bother teaching it to defensive linemen as much, at least back in the old days, because most of us aren't that bright. But it's pretty damn complicated. That's why it's so annoying whenever I'm like really want to crush an individual offensive lineman, and I send tape out to some of my former teammates. They're so annoying. Even the good ones, they're so annoying because they're like, "Well, I don't know exactly what the rules are on this, and exactly it could have been one of seven things here." I'm like, "Oh, come on. Let me just yell at this guy. Come on."
They're taking up for their own, man. You know?
No, it's not even that. No, Drew's not a – Drew is a spiteful, vindictive person.
Is he?
Yeah. To his credit.
To his credit.
He's got enough – Drew should have been a defensive lineman because he's got a lot of unchecked anger about
angst.
Him.
Yeah. Let's hear more from Bobby Slowik here. What positives did you take away from the ass-kicking in Week 3?
Yeah, I thought the way CJ operated was really good. I thought the way our receivers played in the pass game when they faced man coverage, they did a great job. You know, I thought we actually, we had a large number of explosives if you count the plays that were nullified by our own penalties. And those really for us were drive killers. When we were able to stay positive and stay on track, I mean, we were doing what we wanted. Really until the game started getting away from us at the end. And once we started getting too far behind the chains due to our own mistakes, it became tough. It's a tough defense to put yourself in that position.
And that is why Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, and CJ Stroud are in the circle of swarm this week.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they made plays in that game that ultimately don't help you. It doesn't mean that it's a good offense or anything, but they were doing the things they had to do versus a what, in my opinion, is genuinely a very good defense, the Vikings defense. They make it really hard to operate. CJ was making some next-level throws in that game, and about half of them were wiped out by penalty. And there were penalties. It wasn't like it was wiped out by an offensive pass interference penalty that led to it. It was wiped out by a false start or an illegal formation that likely didn't really spring that play. It was really, really annoying.
So all this stuff, we hear Bobby talking about, you know, what went wrong, what went well. A lot more went wrong than went well, obviously. You bake it all together here. And add in the fact that there'll probably be no Tank Dell. We don't know what this Nico Collins situation is with his hamstring. And as of right now, I'm assuming it's Cam Akers starting at tailback. What is your optimism level for the game this weekend that the Texans start to look like the offense that we expected at the beginning of the year?
I think there's two things. One, on the Texan side of things, I think that they do get probably a very back-to-basics mentality this week. And they're not going against a defense like the Vikings where, man, you feel like, all right, we got to scheme up a bunch of different stuff against this scheme because this defensive scheme is such a headache and they can threaten you in so many different ways. I think they go back to basics. I think they play a much cleaner game in terms of the mental errors and the penalties. And the mental errors were almost worse than the penalties in this game when it came to just assignments in the run game and what have you. And then I think the other part of it is that I think the Jaguars are who they are defensively. They play a lot of man defense, and I think they're going to stick to it. And maybe they alter their scheme a little bit, but I don't think the Texans see as much zone as they have in these last 3 weeks. And there will be opportunities downfield. So Between those, I feel relatively optimistic that it's going to be a better version of the Texans offense. It's not going to make me feel any better about them versus the Bills. Even if the Texans score 48 points, I'm still going to be thinking about that Vikings game.
Yes.
And it'll be a step in the right direction.
Yeah, and you got the Bills coming to town the next week too. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, right.
I'm trying not to look ahead to the Bills, but my God, my brain keeps going there.
Same,
Sean.
Man. Yeah. Well, you're doing a show with the wrong guy if that's the case. So, you know what I like, Seth? Forget about scheme and all this other stuff. I like the fact that I had to look up the name of the Jags defensive coordinator just now. Whereas last week, every question was about Brian Flores this and Brian Flores that. And if you're hearing a defensive coordinator or offensive coordinator's name that much, it probably means that the unit that they coach is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Ryan Nielsen is his name, by the way.
Well, Ryan Nielsen, for two reasons. One, if I wanted to act like I was Joe Football, I'd be like, well, clearly, Sean, you don't remember the Falcons game from last year where he was the defensive coordinator.
I remember the game.
But also, he's got he's got one of those funky modern mustaches, and it makes him really hateable. He's got that mustache. You know how I feel about the modern mustache.
Yeah.
Every time I see one, for a little while there, only guys who were wearing the mustache ironically had the mustache. And I'd be like, oh, this is probably a funny guy. And now it's everybody. Dude has a mustache. I'm like, oh, you're just as boring as every other schmuck I know. Yeah. So because they were asked that a lot, both CJ Stroud, D'Amico Ryans, and Bobby Slowick were asked about, hey, you've got some familiarity with him because he was the offensive coordinator in Atlanta last year. How much carryover is there there? I would say with defensive coordinators especially, you might kind of know what they like to do, but they got to do what their personnel can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing there's not as much carryover to where they feel they know exactly what Ryan Nielsen, the defensive coordinator, is going to do in this game. I think this is much more about the one-on-one matchups.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We're going to give away some Cougs tickets. in the next segment. So be listening for that. Cougs, Iowa State. This is the last chance to win tickets this week. We're going to do that in the next segment. We're talking about all this stuff with the Texans in the offense, and it feels like a lot, man. It feels like, you know, the protections and the offensive line and the run game and things like that. Take a step back, and I'll let you listen in on audio about another team in the NFL, and you'll be very thankful that the Texans' problems feel fairly minor compared to this. We've got that for you coming up next.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, Seth, quick question from a texter before we get to the audio that I promised. We're giving away Kook tickets this segment, too, so stay tuned for that. Texter says... I'm a high school O-line coach, Seth. Do you hate me too?
Oh, no. Okay. You're just like a prison warden, you know? That's not your... you're in charge of a bunch of deplorable human beings. I was a high school offensive lineman myself, so I...
Did you hate yourself back then?
I did. Hmm. But also for many other reasons as well for a long time. Yeah. Don't worry, kids. It only took me about 40 years to stop hating myself for various things.
You'll get there.
Your 40s are an awesome time in life because you accept the things you hate yourself for. You just realize like, it's no big deal, really. I'm not going to change, but I can accept the things I hate myself for. Yeah.
So we've spent the better part of this week kind of picking at certain things with the Texans offense, penalties, obviously, O-line play, things that certain guys can do better offensively. Bobby Slowick stood up yesterday and answered a lot of questions about things going on with the offense. We have not seen the offense we anticipated seeing quite yet. I would say this, at least there's not talk of having to swap out the entire system to accommodate your quarterback.
Right. Though nobody's running in here saying like we need to be more RPO based.
Yeah,
that's the ticket.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Here's
I do think some people want the Texans to spread it out more.
Yeah,
I think the problem again is it all. I hate it. I'm a broken record this week. It all comes back to the offensive line.
Sure,
you can't spread it out behind this offensive line.
That's
my
right.
God.
No. This is AJ McCarron, former Texan, former teammate of Deshaun Watson. All right, so. This is one of the few people I've seen make excuses for Deshaun Watson, Seth. So I want to run this by you here and see if this makes any sense. And be thankful, Texan fans, that the talk of how to fix this offense isn't just basically taking the playbook and throwing it in the river.
We had guys hurt in and out. Randall Cobb was, older, didn't run as well, but stayed hurt. Like, we didn't have nowhere near the amount of guys that we did in 2019. And we were still successful because you put him in an offense that he knows, that he truly believes in, that he knows the reads. He can run it with his eyes closed. The dude can go make plays. I promise you that. And he throws the ball. He has accuracy. He can sling it. When he's in an offense like this, it is night and day. I'm telling you, everything from the time you open the playbook, it looks like Chinese to English. And you're like, oh, I don't know Chinese. So it's like, I mean, it's totally different.
I didn't realize AJ McCarron didn't get in front of the microphone a whole bunch when he was with the Texans.
Yeah, the same observation I did.
I guess I forgot that he sounded like such an Alabama head.
I didn't realize it either. Yeah.
Oh, big shocker. Oh, you don't know Chinese. Is that right, AJ? I never would have guessed.
Still working on English.
Say. Yeah. You don't say. Yeah. Look, it's no. The problem is the offense that he's in right now is one that is great for taking guys just like AJ McCarron. if they're not too stupid to figure it out, and getting the absolute best out of them. Mm-hmm. That's the old Kubiak-Shanahan system will get the best out of a Sage Rosenfels or a Matt Schaub or any of those guys. So I can't blame the system for Deshaun until I see Deshaun actually make an effort at just really genuinely grasping the system and getting it. I do hear in all of that, though, what I do hear is a plea for former Ohio State offensive coordinator and current Boston College head coach Bill O'Brien to be the head coach of the Cleveland Browns.
I heard the same thing, man. Yeah. Get that system, or at least Tim Kelly.
Yeah, it's true. Tim Kelly was the offensive coordinator the year that Deshaun had his best year.
That's
really,
right.
As a passer, the offense didn't score any points. They were 20th in scoring.
Don't tell that to AJ McCarron. He just made it sound like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, we were a boy. That was nothing ever hit the Gulf Coast like that since
Hell, you were watching. This was funny. Greg Williams, former interim head coach of the Browns, who I think is still bitter at the Browns to this day for hiring
Kevin. Stopped dyeing his goatee, at least.
Yeah.
Though. I could say I can give him that. Greg Williams stopped dyeing his goatee black.
He co-hosts Come Get Some, a podcast, which is the most
Sounds
Greg Williams
as hell.
Title ever for a podcast.
Yeah.
But he kills Deshaun Watson and Kevin Stefanski here.
How about, Coach, if we get to conclusion time?
The big time.
Maybe he just can't play anymore.
The big time on the body language thing, it drives me bananas. You know, I have a PhD in body language and all that stuff, mm-hmm. and nothing more irritates me to see over on the sideline, in between series, that's when good coaches, good players make adjustments in the game to go out on the next series, but you can't do that when you have a towel over your head. You can't do that when you're not sitting around anybody else is talking about what do you see, how do we do that. And as coaches, you have to go to these people and get them together, okay, and make the adjustment in game.
Yeah.
PhD in body language.
The funny thing about Greg Williams is that he doesn't mean that figuratively. I think he definitely claims that he has a PhD in body
language. Dude, I think he printed one and hung it on his wall.
Remember when he claimed he got letters offering him head coach jobs
yes.
a couple years back?
Yeah.
I have the letters.
Yeah.
They offered me jobs. I'm sure you do.
Right. In 2021, everybody's writing letters to people.
Yes, yes. For offers of employment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. None of it's electronic. Yeah.
That's a classic old way. You send off a letter. You hope to hear back sometime within the next 2 weeks as to whether when you get the embossed seal from Greg Williams back that he's in. But I do agree with him on that. That's something a lot of our listeners have pointed out during that Deshaun is not over there with his head down on the iPad trying to figure things out during the break.
Got a towel
and
over his head.
That's a bad look. That's a bad look for a guy that's supposed to be out front. And body language is overrated at times, but I think with quarterback, 100% it matters.
Yep.
And, you know, Deshaun, I don't know, man. Like, Deshaun has never really looked like there's a level of urgency to fix some of the things that he needs to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to when he was here in Houston, it used to really annoy me that some of the backfield mechanics are just the fakes
play
and the
fakes.
Handoffs and everything were always really sloppy. It was really easy for defensive ends and linebackers to get a tip on whether this was play action or not because Deshaun was so sloppy with his fakes. And then we read that article in The Athletic about when Kevin Stefanski was first talking to Deshaun, and Deshaun asked for tips.
Yeah.
Hey, you got any tips? You know, for how I can get better. This is before the Browns signed him.
Yep.
Or traded for him. And Stefanski said, "Well, you know, actually, we think you could do a better job with your fakes." And Deshaun's response was, "Ha! You sound just like my high school coach." And I'm like, "You son of a
exactly.
Like, what the?
Oh my god!
So you think that?" After years and years of your high school coach and NFL coaches probably telling you this, that he's going to change with Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, dude. So, I mean, our problems are fairly minor compared to this. Here's actually one from Deshaun. He was asked but he had a bad press conference on Wednesday. Like a bad press conference.
You don't say, really.
Yeah. Okay. He was asked about more design. Hey, how about more designed runs? Since the regular stuff's not working, how about more designed runs?
Would you like to see more designed runs in the game plan? I don't mean just...
For me?
Yeah.
No. I'm not going in there to ask them for more designed runs, so...
To avoid it, just knowing you're going to run with the ball from...
I'm not trying. If I don't have to run, I'm not going to run. So I'm not trying to take any hits.
Not more designed runs.
Because I'm not a running quarterback in a sense. I can make things happen, but I'm not trying to run. I'm not a running back. That's not my specialties. You know, they signed me to throw the ball, make decisions, and be a quarterback, not a runner.
Boy, that is a blue collar Midwest
He's
quote right there.
Have you not checked my contract? Do you not know? You know what? I might have to give a little bit of a pass on something I used to criticize Bill O'Brien for, which was I always felt like just two designed runs per game for Deshaun Watson.
Right.
Just two a game.
Yeah.
And it can pay huge dividends. Yeah. It makes your zone read fakes and everything like that much scarier and more effective. Just two per game. Just give me two designed runs per game.
Yep.
And maybe that's ultimately what it that's what the hold up was. It was he just flat out didn't want to be a running quarterback. Yeah.
Deshaun Watson. He will do anything for love. But he won't do that.
I won't do that. He went full meatloaf.
I would do anything for Stefanski, but I won't do that.
You guys, look, I know that the offense is just a decrepit mess right now, but I'm not going to do anything it takes to have a good offense. God, no.
People often wonder when they listen to Meatloaf, I would do anything for love, exactly what that is. Turns out it was designed runs in the West Coast offense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll do that. Meatloaf, we don't want you to do that. It's okay.
I'm going to go to one of those websites I get into rabbit holes on sometimes where it's like songmeanings.net or whatever, where people weigh in with like their opinions on the what various lyrics mean. I'm going to add that.
Stop suggesting me. Like, I didn't know that existed either. I don't need that in my life.
Yeah.
I'm done.
You got all these, like, English lit majors on there breaking down the metaphors
Dude,
for you.
I've got so much stuff I got to watch.
Don't do it. It makes you feel dumb. You're like, oh, how can I not see that? Oh.
Man. Crazy. I went to the doctor yesterday. I got new antibiotics for my elbow, so that's why I have more energy today. They don't make me as drowsy.
Oh, good, because this started with the pregame last week. You had what you thought was an elbow infection, and I could tell it was distracting you. Or maybe just physically taxing you as you were courageously fighting off the infection.
It hurt. Well, I'm no Deshaun Watson. If you're like, hey, Sean, I know you've got an infection on your elbow. Can you host a pregame show for the Texans? I don't know, man. No, I'm not that. I would say, hell yeah, I can. I'll battle. I'll fight.
So, yeah, I don't know. I was getting close. I know as they switch up your antibiotics and everything, at some point, you might just have to cut it off. I mean, don't let your vanity get in the way here.
My elbow or my arm?
Your arm. It would be above the elbow, duh. So, yeah, cut off your arm.
It's my left arm.
Don't let your vanity and your need to be a dude with two functioning arms hold you back from being able to finish out this season, Sean.
That's true.
You'll win the Edblock Courage Award if you
for radio.
You'll win the Edblock Courage Award and possibly comeback radio personality.
Comeback radio host of the year, not having a left arm. Yeah. That's a boy.
100% if you do it without anesthesia.
With a saw. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of historically set docudramas and everything. I think that's where it's at for me. If I ever have to get something amputated, I'm doing it without anesthesia.
I was getting a little worried. Like Tuesday, Wednesday this week where it wasn't really getting better, but they changed up my antibiotics and now I can feel it. Like, all right. I'm going to start to be normal, feel normal again here soon.
Yeah, that's kind of scary, though.
Yeah,
that's
man.
This day and age, I mean, you get some of these antibiotic-resistant bacteria and everything.
And this is a cut on my elbow. I had a staph infection on my leg back in June. Like, I don't know what... It's not like I'm walking around, rolling around in portalettes or something like that.
You live in a petri dish.
No,
maybe
I live in a clean...
Maybe you did the dishes or the laundry every now and then.
Nobody's apartment is cleaner than mine. I left this morning and Amy's got a thing of Fabioso out on the counter and she's cleaning at 5 in the morning.
Of course it wouldn't be Amy's fault. I just don't know how much damage you can do while you're left alone if Amy goes out like on a girls' weekend or something.
Now that's
and you don't know how your washing machine works. Yeah.
Good
you
This is the pep talk I needed. It's true. I got to figure out how to work these damn machines. It's, in case anything ever happens to Amy, I got to learn how to wash my dishes and clothes.
There was a staff issue going through the league back in the early 2000s or late 90s. I can't remember when. But I remember we had an equipment manager that was like really chafing against the new regulations for how often he was going to have to launder the clothes.
Oh, jeez.
He thought it was all a media propaganda, something or other, whatever. Yeah, yeah.
It's like Y2K.
I'm like, dude, the clothes kind of stink too. Yeah, so yeah. Can we just do it for that?
Yeah,
can we do it for that?
That would help. All right, let's give away some tickets. Cougs tickets. 713-572-4610. Caller number 5 wins a 4-pack of tickets to this Saturday's U of H versus Iowa State game. I've laughed a lot today, man. My face hurts. 713-572-4610. You're on your way to Cougs versus Iowa State. 4 tickets, and have a good time, man. Should be a fun time. 6 p.m. start, TDECU Stadium. It's the Cougs and the Cyclones, and your tickets courtesy of Houston sports leader, Sports Radio 610. All right, let's make final preparations here, at least on this show, for Jags and Texans, and lay out what needs to happen, but also the serious importance of this game as it pertains to the season. We're going to lay it out for you. Coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. Mike and Cyfair. Ronnie Lott would have cut off his arm to finish the show, bitches.
Yeah.
He would have. That's true.
Dude, we haven't gotten to that point yet. No. I'm not saying that you should cut off your arm because of your elbow infection. I'm saying that you need to be ready to do it.
Yeah. No, I understand.
And you can't do it with anesthesia because then you wouldn't be able to talk into the microphone.
Oh, you want me to keep talking while they're slicing my arm off? Is that the deal?
No, but they can do it during a break.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
The old time orthopedists, Sean. Yeah. They were like, they tended to be pretty big, strong dudes because that was one of the things before anesthesia was that you wanted to be able to do it as quick as possible.
Yeah.
And so like they would just, they'd get in there and there were their saws and their tourniquets and everything. And they would just try to make the most excruciating thing that could probably ever happen to you happen as quick as possible.
Wow. Yeah. And then along came football and they started playing that instead.
Yeah. We all would have been. Usually,
you would have been.
They didn't care. It kind of filters. I think a lot of doctors would probably agree with this. It's kind of a perception of orthopedists as not the brightest stars in the sky when it comes to the medical profession.
I didn't say
there's still a little bit of a jock mentality to the orthopedists. They're like, all right, look, let's get in there and let's cut some stuff up and pull some stuff out. That's how we'll fix
it. They're fun. Yeah.
Smack it with a hammer or something. Yeah.
This is this game coming up on Sunday between the Jags and the Texans. This is one of those games where the upside of a win and the downside of a loss are drastically different. You know, and I don't know that it's ever equal with anything, but you win this game, especially now that you're a touchdown favorite. Like, this has turned into one of those, okay, the perception is they should win this game. Like, this is one of those, like, if you lose it, you messed up. They win this game. They're 3-1, 2-0 in the division against what I feel are the two better of the three teams in the division. Like, you've got a win over the Colts on the road, and now you'd have a win at home against the Jags. That's a fantastic start in the division. So that's great. That's all well and good. If they lose this game, and I'm basing a lot of this on what I saw on Monday and what I've seen from the Bills this year, I do not want to come in next week to a 2-2 football team on a 2-game losing streak that just got upset at home by a touchdown underdog team, quarterbacked by Trevor Lawrence, who hadn't won a game since last November, and then you got the Bills coming to town.
Yeah.
And then you've got two road games after that, one in New England and one in Green Bay. I know New England's not a great team. We don't know who's going to be quarterback for Green Bay, but quite honestly, thus far, it hadn't really mattered. It's two road games, okay? The downside to a loss in this game on Sunday, not to be doom and gloom or anything here, but just to look at both sides of the coin, is big. Like, this is it is imperative they take care of their business this Sunday against the Jags.
Yeah.
Based on what's coming down the pipe.
Right. And we saw after the first two games, we talked about it a lot. at the time, this is not hindsight reasoning or anything, that they got away with a lot of sloppiness in those first two games that you're not going to get away with versus the good teams. And then it became a little bit of, okay, well, this Vikings defense is really good, and it looks like Sam Darnold might be a different guy. We don't know how good he is, but try not to play like you did in the last 2 weeks. They went ahead and played like they did in the previous 2 weeks, and they got destroyed.
Yep.
So for me, first and foremost, it's can the offense go out and play clean football where they're not shooting themselves in the foot, where they're not making mental errors that allow, like, they're shooting themselves in the foot with penalties, but then also they make mental errors in the blocking, both in the run and the pass game, that lead to guys just making tackles for a loss with nobody blocking at all. Can we do that versus the Jaguars? Yeah. If you do that, you will win this game. But then it becomes after that, all right, now you're going to go against the Bills, a very good football team, something that the Jaguars are not. And can you keep it up versus them and produce? So I'll feel better about this team if they just play clean football, because I'll be really surprised if they play clean football and lose. I think it's almost impossible. If they just go out and play clean football and don't make boneheaded errors, they should win this game. But that's a much bigger obstacle than it should be right now,
yeah,
because they have not played a clean football game yet.
I have a very similar feel to this as I did to the Bears game a couple of weeks ago. And there are some similarities, I think, between the two. Put Trevor Lawrence's contract aside for a second. We're talking about two former number one, Caleb Williams and Trevor Lawrence, two former number one overall picks that were considered the G word, generational talent coming out. You know, they both had that label coming out. Both have struggled early so far this year. Trevor's been struggling since the middle of last year. Obviously Caleb's career just began a month ago. So there's that. There are weapons on both of those teams too. You know, like, there are guys you got to keep an eye on. Like, same way you got to Roma Dunze and DJ Moore. DeAndre Swift has stunk so far this year, but at least at the time I felt he deserved respect. Similarly, I think the Jags have a lot of weapons that can hurt you, man. Like, you've got to be on your you got to be on your assignments defensively. Christian Kirk, Brian Thomas, you know, like Roma Dunze, a solid rookie receiver.
Yeah.
And then they signed Gabe Davis in free agency. And I think Travis Etienne is one of the better running backs in the league. There are a lot of guys that can hurt you if Trevor Lawrence gets the time to allow it. You know, you got to heat up Trevor Lawrence in this game.
Yeah, I think that getting pressure, they've gotten pressure. You know, the Texans defensive line, whether it results in a bunch of sacks in any given week, that never is really the good indication. The biggest thing with the Texans defensive line right now is that they haven't always been disciplined in their pass rush. The defensive tackles aren't always kind of coming out to replace and contain when they should be. We saw that last week with Sam Darnold when he got outside the pocket. Nobody, I don't care who your defensive backs are, if Justin Jefferson has 6.2 seconds to run around in the end zone, more times than not, he's going to figure out a way to get open.
Yep.
So I don't worry about the fact that it was Murray on him on that play. It was more that the defensive line wasn't disciplined. But getting pressure on Trevor Lawrence and making him be who he has been in the eight straight losses he's had since last year's game against the Texans. Yeah, keep him that guy, and you should be just fine.
Yep. So you got to run the football offensively. There had been some conjecture that Damian Pierce could come back this weekend. I think I saw Aaron Wilson report that there was a possibility of it. He has yet to practice this week. I can't imagine if Damian doesn't practice today that he's playing on Sunday. So I am anticipating until I see otherwise, till I see Damian Pierce listed as at least limited at practice, I'm going to assume that it's Cam Akers. That's what I'll be interested to see, Seth. If there's no Pierce and no Mixon, but they're able to run the football, and they're in a game where in the second half it makes sense for them to run the football to, you know, to soak up the clock, possess the ball. How does that get distributed? Does Cam Akers become a workhorse for them, or is it they really trust Dario Gumawale, even though the ceiling on Dare is very low as far as what he's capable of?
But if they can get him to churn out 3 yards at a time, et cetera, et cetera. I think that honestly, a big part of that is that, look, I know Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard love their pass rush ratings and all that, or pass blocking grades and number of pressures allowed, et cetera, et cetera. They are very average run blockers at this point in the season, which they have been in the past. So for them, I think the challenge is, look, you're going against Hines Allen on one side, the defensive end for the Jaguars. And you've got Trayvon Walker on the other side. Trayvon Walker has not been awesome as a pass rusher, but he's a pretty stout run defender. So, like, what can you guys accomplish versus them, and what can the guys on the interior do to actually productively run the football? I want to see growth there. I want to see actually good, genuinely good run blocking this week.
I want to see them, this is the last one, then we'll bring John Lopez and Reggie Atatula in on this. I want to see them put the foot on the throat if they get up 10-0, 14-0, or 17-3. Too often this team lets teams back into games. They let teams hang around. The penalties have been a big part of that this season. But we know last season they'd get up on teams, and all of a sudden the offense would just go into a funk. One turnovers a lot of the time, because they turn the ball over less than anybody in the league. It was just they would – it's like they'd run out of gas offensively, and all of a sudden a mistake here, a mistake there, and a team's back in the game. Put the foot on the throat. Let's get Doug Peterson fired. Let's get that center part that he's got out of this league. There's no room for that haircut in this league anymore. It's 1987 came and went.
Is that jealousy?
No. God, okay. No.
I just want to make sure.
I'm totally happy with I'm cool being bald. I'm cool being bald.
Yeah, no, now if Doug Peterson had good hair or something, then it would be jealousy.
Right. Yeah.
No, I think what is happening here in my mind was that the hair is bad, and you're so mad. Like, if you have hair, you need to make sure that it looks good.
That's fair. I hadn't thought. That's not how I'm looking at it, but I think that's a fair. That's a fair.
That's
point.
That's how
of
you
view.
Wore your hair back in the day,
right? Yeah, it when really I was is. In high school in 1986.
No, I've seen pictures.
Yeah, and it was a beautiful head of hair, and it made sense back then.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
when we're off to watch Back to the Future at the movies.
That's
or
the Pendergast cut. I've seen pictures.
It's the younger Pendergast cut.
Yeah, Doug Peterson, it looks like he's trying to relive the glory of the days back when his main responsibilities as a football player were to, get Brett Favre's cast offs to sign NDAs yes. and all that.
Yeah, thank you. Exactly. So 27-17, that's my prediction. You got a feel on this, Seth? How you feeling on the...
I'll go with 27-17.
Okay.
I'll take that.
Okay, cool.
Who did I predict the 48-3 for?
48-14 over the Bears.
The Bears. So did they get that? Did they cover that?
They didn't cover that, no.
Okay.
No, they didn't cover that. No, you're on the right side.
I don't
side.
Have the mind for numbers that you do.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate that. What's up, fellas?
Oh, this?
Yeah,
this
I know.
This is happening.
I know. This is a huge game. Oh. You lose this game, and now all of a sudden... Like, you lose this game... And not to go.
You're not a good football team.
That's probably the biggest thing is you're not a good football team. But you also got the Bills and two road games coming after that.
Yeah.
I said 6-2 for the first 8 games is very doable. I still feel that way. You lose this game, 6-2 is out the window.
Yeah.
You're losing at least 2 more. If this is, because at that point, you're right, Seth. At that point, if you lose this game, this is who you've been for 4 games now. Yeah. I know you won 2, but those were not impressive wins.
Yeah, it's practically a quarter of the season.
Yeah, man.
That's not a good sign.
Hell, even if you win this game, but not in a particular way, we still got questions about how good of a team actually are.
Yep, for sure.
27-17, when you said it, I actually was thinking, I want to be a little greedier than that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, no, I'm not predicting it. Okay. I want it to look better than that.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah.
I don't trust them to make it look better than that. Yeah, so, but man, should be good. Back at home, a little Jacksonville, a little Buffalo, back-to-back weeks. It'll be good.
Yeah.
And then we got our eyes on, do you guys have a preference as to who the Astros play in the wild card round?
It's probably going to be Detroit or Kansas City. It's going to be Detroit, and it doesn't really matter. I guess Detroit.
You prefer Detroit?
I guess. It's a close call.
Detroit's better for storylines because you got the AJ Hinch thing.
Yeah.
Kansas City just doesn't scare me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was looking at certain things with Detroit. Their pitching has been pretty solid. I think
Skubal can win you half. He can get you half of what you need.
100%. Yeah. And so I think you were pointing to the idea that they are almost profiled a little bit like the Mariners. I guess if the Mariners were a little bit better.
Yeah.
The Royals feel like they have a couple guys when it comes to the bats, and then you just don't have to worry about anything else. So it might be the Royals now.
Yeah. It's just waiting for the Twins to get eliminated so I can get on Twitter all day tomorrow and just go after people that came after me back in July.
I loved your Mariners tweet, too.
what did I say?
I forget exactly. But
I think it was, wasn't it just
they got knocked out. Shame? I put dancing on
their grave. Yeah.
I put Jerry Seinfeld going, oh, that's a shame. That's a shame.
Yeah,
they got knocked out. Seattle Mariners have been eliminated, and that's a shame. And that's exactly how I feel.
Yes.
Exactly how I feel. All right, gentlemen. Well, we will clear the way for you guys here.
Excellent.
Yes. Have a great show. Seth, I will see you 9 a.m. Seth's got this look like he can't wait to hear where he's supposed to be. 9 a.m.
I just like having a plan.
9 a.m. Sunday morning. Right outside NRG Stadium.
Oh, that's where.
Southeast side. Yeah. Texans
Antibodies
countdown.
Antibodies and a cocktail of antibiotics to you.
Thank you. I need them. I've got them. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. We're done. We're out of time. You're listening to KLT, KLT HD2 on Odyssey Station.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.